Welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast, where it's all about solving the challenges of living with allergies so you can be more confident and stay allergy safe. Here's your host. She lives in a country where she can't get Marmite. Sad face. Nina Modak.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I hope you have had a very lovely Christmas and a happy new year. It is the 2nd of January and it is the second day of 2017. How exciting. So today, as I mentioned in last week's episode, I am doing a little series or a little two-parter where I'm talking to my mum about my allergy journey and what we've learned. Because over the last few weeks, I've been talking to a lot of allergy mums, but many of you probably don't know my allergy journey and how I've learned to deal with anaphylaxis, tea tree, and groundnuts. So I carry my EpiPens, I carry my antihistamine, I carry my inhalers, of course, with me everywhere I go. So without further ado, introducing my mum, Susie, and today's episode, where I'll be talking to her all about how she found out I had a nut allergy. Okay, here we go. Hello, Mum.
Hi.
Welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast, and thanks for agreeing to do these interviews. Everyone who doesn't know, we'll be doing a series of interviews where we'll be, Mum and I will be chatting about my allergy and where we've come and where we've gone and what we've got through and now how the tables have turned. Okay, yes. So Mum, how about you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself first?
Myself, right. Well, my interests in life are I started sewing as soon as I could hold a needle, and I was singing before then. So those are two things that have been persistently with me and that I have followed to a, as my interests grew, I went to college for both of them eventually. And it was whilst I was working as a dressmaker designer, I met my husband and we decided to have children. I knew he actually had a problem with peanuts and almonds. So I was always very careful around him with them. Now, we had a baby, Nina, and everything was going swimmingly, except that she did happen to do projectile vomiting, which was extraordinary. Just came out in a great big arc as soon as I'd fed her. So then we decided, with the doctor's help, that she really ought to just go on the Y-soy, the baby milk. And she settled down very well. And I was struggling, because she was eczema baby too, and I was struggling to find some other proteins for her to eat. So I thought, well, I know her dad has a problem with peanuts, but I don't. So she may not have inherited that. So I thought I would try Nina out on a tiny bit of peanut butter. Now, I have to tell you just how tiny this piece of butter was. There, if you could imagine cutting a little bit off the edge of your toast, the size of the last digit of your little finger, and I, before I gave it to her, I scraped all the peanut butter, everything off it that I possibly could. So I thought, if she's going to have a reaction, it probably won't be that big because I've scraped everything off I could. And so this nine-month-old Nina, after eating this little bit of toast, I was in the kitchen making food. After about 20 minutes, started just pulling herself up on my trouser legs and just clinging. And I didn't look down to start with, but then Nina's persistence made me reach down to her and pick her up, and I noticed all these red splodges on her face and her neck, and they started turning into what looked like stingy nettle rash. So I thought, oh my goodness, there's a problem. So I opened up the baby grow and saw it was descending down her torso. I thought, oh god. So I phoned the doctor immediately. This happened to be 7 p.m. in the evening. he said, well, what have you given her to eat? And I said, the tiniest bit of toast and peanut butter. And he said, well, that must be it then. So he said, can you go and get some antihistamines from the chemist? So off I trot to the chemist with Nina. Now, this is what life happens. There are things in life called wild cards, and they just happen. This was the day that my husband was at a college course on the other side of London. It was also the day I had no money in my purse, nobody who could look after Nina. So I thought, well, I've got to get some antihistamines, Pyritin, somehow. So I thought, right, I'm just going to take her down to the chemist with me. Now, we lived very near Streatham. And when I got down there, there were the usual drug pushers and prostitutes in the chemist hanging about.
Lovely.
So in I walk with my toddler in my arms and say to the pharmacist, I have got to have some Pyritin now. I've just spoken to Dr. Ashby. I said, I have money, no nothing. I said, you take my credit card, you take my purse, you take everything. I just need some antihistamine.
And what happened?
Well, he looked at me. He looked at Nina in my arms, who was really kind of... And he got rid of the other people and sorted them out. And I said, look, what can I do? Really? And I said, you can see she's getting worse by the minute. I said, I've got to have some. And he said, right, yeah, I can. He said, what I'll do, I want you to go to your doctor first thing tomorrow morning and bring a prescription for me. On that basis, I will give you the Pyritin now. I said, okay, fine. So I got Nina back to pour this sickly sweet sugary stuff down her throat that she absolutely hated because we didn't feed her any sweets or anything like that. She'd never tasted sweet stuff until that moment. And then within half an hour, Nina got up in her cot and launched the contents of her stomach onto the floor.
Oh, that's nice. Sorry.
Oh, it was a really hard day.
I bet. And,
your dad got home about 9:30, 10 o'clock. And of course, we didn't have mobile phones.
Oh, yeah, because this was.
I couldn't call him to tell him what was happening. I couldn't say come back from college.
Yes, I was born in 91, everyone. I was born in 1991, so there were no mobile phones at this point, and we certainly didn't have anything like that.
It was only the best of the best sales reps that had those. And my husband hadn't got that far yet, up the chain, up the food ladder. Food chain, that's it. Anyway, he comes home and we go and see the doctor the next day, and he said, well, we think she's allergic to it, so you're going to have to make sure she doesn't get any of these, but we'll organize some testing for her. Actually, we didn't organize your testing, actually, Nina. We just decided.
We didn't decide on your testing.
Yeah, the doctor said, we'll just keep her off all nuts. And okay, that's what we'll do. And that's when my shopping trip extended by an extra hour, because that's when you have to start reading the labels on everything.
Mm.
And the amount of things that had warnings about nuts and things you never even would have thought of, like cordials for making a squash.
Wow.
Those had nut warnings. I thought, why have they got nut warnings? So investigated and found out that the oil was used as a carrier for some things or whatever they put in the orange in the squashes just to add vitamins or color or something. But the oils were there as a stabilizer for those ingredients to be in the squash concentrate.
Wow.
So we ditched the squash. We started giving you orange juice instead, watered down orange juice, mm-hmm. which you rather liked.
I remember that.
And it wasn't until we had to put you in playgroup that I was, my goodness, what it is, but I don't have any proof. So I talked to them. They said, well, can you get some testing done? So we actually did get you tested. And that was a really, really scary moment when the letter came back from the consultant saying that you're highly allergic to peanuts and Brazil nuts. And I'd never even thought about Brazil nuts. That you had allergic tendencies towards the others, but it wasn't surprising because you're immunoglobulin E was raised.
Yeah.
But that's not surprising in children with allergic tendencies.
Okay.
So yes, I sat down for the whole day, shocked out of my socks. I was shocked.
So just before I go back to the shocked out your socks feeling, why, when I had that first reaction at 9 months old, why didn't you get me tested then?
Well, I had no idea the seriousness of the problem.
Okay.
What should have happened was my GP should have said to me, go to A&E straight away.
He yes. didn't. And do you know why, or?
No, I didn't really talk to him on that score.
Okay,
and so I don't know that even he saw allergies as life-threatening.
No.
I don't know if even he saw it.
Well, because this would have been 92 when I was 9 months. And that's, as far as I'm aware, around the time that the anaphylaxis campaign actually only just became incorporated, I think.
Yes,
as a
an
charity.
Entity.
Yeah. Okay, so I wasn't tested as a nine-month-old. The doctors were uninformed and had no idea. Did you know, apart from Dad, did you know of anyone having... And Dad's allergy isn't severe, is it? No, Dad just gets an itchy mouth, doesn't he?
No.
Dad gets an itchy mouth and
throat and
feels uncomfortable. Okay, so can you go
back? But we've avoided nuts and particularly almonds because of that.
Yeah, okay. And that's probably why you didn't really think about it before with me, because you didn't really have it in the house. I know you like peanuts and things, but then Dad's allergic. Okay.
Yeah.
When it came to playgroup, so why did you decide to get me tested before I went to playgroup?
Well, they actually needed the forms filled in properly, and they said to me, well, we wouldn't be able to admit her unless we know how serious her allergy is. So I thought, oh, right. So I would have to get this all organised for you entering into school, which they told me about. So I thought, okay, I'll get it sorted.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. And I remember sitting with the consultant for the first time, and I felt like I was being interrogated.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I felt that. It was probably more a statement about me and my ability to deal with people challenging me or trying to get information. But he sensed this, and he said to me, please understand, I'm just asking these questions for information.
Okay.
And when I felt a huge sense of relief, and then I started calming down and answering his questions as clearly and as with much detail as possible that I
remember.
But I still was shocked out of my socks to receive his letter just a week later with the test result.
And how were the tests? Like, what did you go through? What happened to me? How did you feel?
Oh, you had to have some blood taken.
Okay.
You weren't very happy about that at all.
Was that the time that I got the green medicine?
Probably. No, the green medicine on the back of your hand was another time.
Oh, okay.
You were two and a half, 3 years old then. That was when your lip got split.
Ah, okay. Different story. Nothing to do with allergies. And totally to do with my brother. if anyone's interested, they can ask another time. Okay, so back to getting the letter from the doctor and you're shocked out of your socks.
Yeah, because this is a life-changing event. Not just your life, but mine and Dad's too.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody else who knows us who is ever going to have the opportunity to feed you.
True. So, and at that point, Jacob was around, wasn't he?
No.
Was he? No, okay.
Oh, no, yeah. He was around. Yeah.
Jacob was a baby.
Yes.
Okay. So what did you do the day you found out?
Well, I sat down and drank coffee for the day. I was thinking, what do I do now? What do I do now? There was no internet.
Yep, there wasn't.
I thought, right, well, I've got to sort my shopping out. So I've started looking through some recipe books to feed children, babies, try and work out some recipes for you, because loads, nearly all the baby jars of food said, warning, may contain nuts, warning, 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 warning. There was warnings everywhere in the supermarket. So I thought, there's nothing for it. She's just going to have the food the next day, what we have had the night before. So whatever I cooked that evening for me and your dad, you got minced up for the next day. You loved it. You really enjoyed your chili con carne and broccoli, which we still have to this day, as you know.
Yes, and I love it. Okay, so I was eating adult food just from well, forever.
Yeah.
Great.
Yep.
Okay, so it was first the shopping, and how did it change your shopping trip?
Making it much longer, reading things,
Yeah.
being new that I wanted to get. I would read the label and I'd read it. I thought, oh, right, can't get that back on the shelf. So many things got back on the shelf just because there was a nut warning. And we decided that we weren't going to have any nut warning things in the house that you could possibly get hold of.
And did you still eat
So.
peanut butter and nuts when I was a baby?
I personally did, but I had always been careful about eating it because your
Yeah.
dad was had a problem with them. So I would make sure that I wouldn't slather the piece of toast in peanut butter. I would cut my toast into soldiers and I would have the jar open and just put my knife into the jar and put it on my toast and bite that bit off. So the only place that peanut butter would be is in the jar, on the knife, or in my mouth.
Sensible.
That
And
it
I
wouldn't accidentally go on plates anywhere. It was
ah.
just that reduced process so that it wouldn't accidentally get spread anywhere.
Yeah. Okay.
And then
Yeah,
I
and that
washed my hands straight after.
Yeah, and that I remember that's carried on all throughout my growing up, which yeah,
Yeah.
I've got very used to.
Yeah. Listeners here will know the story of Sleeping Beauty.
Yes.
Now, tell me, why did Sleeping Beauty put her finger on that needle? Wow. Sleeping Beauty. Fairy stories are all allegorical, and there is always a need for people to know these stories because these situations come up in real life. It's just a way of showing children what's going to happen in a way they understand. Brilliant. I love fairy stories for that. But Sleeping Beauty was particularly relevant to us because the only reason that Sleeping Beauty put her finger on the spindle needle, put her finger on it and said, "What's that?" and immediately fell into a sleep, was only because her father had been told that Sleeping Beauty would prick her finger and die on a spinning wheel. So he got decided to get rid of every single spinning wheel in the country. So of course, as Sleeping Beauty was growing up, she never saw a spinning wheel. She never knew what they were. She didn't know what they looked like, that they even existed. So when she sees the witch up in the loft and she puts her finger on the spindle, she doesn't know what it is. And this is why I have nuts and have continued to eat them, because I knew it was very important that Nina learned to live around nuts in a controlled environment, and also that she would need to know how to avoid them. And the only way you can do that is teaching it at home. And I think if Sleeping Beauty's father had kept some spinning wheels and said, "Don't ever prick your finger on one of these, because if you do, you'll die," she may never have died. But then again, we wouldn't have had the fairy story. But it's around for a reason. And this, for me, is the very reason why that story is known to me, because these kinds of things happen. Make yourself aware of the dangers that face you personally, and you're far more likely to be able to avoid problems because you are informed
Yeah,
and educated.
I think that's definitely right, because I'm as an adult now, and
And I remember as a teenager, especially as I got older and I was more independent, so, you know, when I was allowed to go places by myself, go out with my friends and come back a bit later than, you know, 6 o'clock in the evening, things like that, go out to parties with my friends and be a bit more independent. I just from hearing you eat nuts, I can now recognize the sound of a crunch of a nut, and it sounds different to, you know, toast, or I can hear it in someone's mouth when they it's one of those things. And then I'm always very aware of how people eat nuts. I don't know why, but it's probably because you ate nuts in the house and I knew how you ate them and how you were careful and how you described how you ate the nuts to me. And if you ate them, I mean, I'd never like the smell. I don't like the smell. It makes me feel a bit sick. So I'd just leave. But if I couldn't smell it, I was okay. And for anyone listening, I don't have an airborne allergy, so I can be around nuts. I just don't like the smell.
That was also part of your learning process, wasn't it? And I think that your education vis-a-vis your allergy was really helped by this. Yeah. And it's also another thing about an allergy that the young person has to eventually own it, because if they don't own it, there has always got to be somebody around looking over their shoulder saying, oh, don't eat that, don't touch that, don't. And that's no way for anybody to live the life, the sufferer or those close around him, her.
Yeah, well, it's no way to live a life at all, any way or shape or form. It's...
Well, Mum, does this have any nuts in? And I'd say, oh, I haven't checked. That would be that you had taken ownership of your allergy. That's a horrible, tragic thing for a person to have. But, you know, I think it's actually easier to manage an allergy with a young child, because they're very teachable. They just absorb and learn everything you tell them.
Teenager.
And it becomes a part of their existence. It becomes a part of their existence by the time they get to the years where they're having to learn to deal with all these hormones that start surging around their body and all these strictures they're fighting against. That is in place and established. I think it's a far harder thing for somebody to deal with when they come to it as a young adult, actually.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Because I think I remember one of my university friends became anaphylactic at 14 to nuts. And
that must have been very hard.
It was her mum was a nurse. So she had no idea what was going on when she ate a nut that she'd always eaten. And then she went into shock. Her mum was a nurse and freaked out, but then realised that she was having a severe allergic reaction. So her mum went into proper nurse mode and sorted her out. And she was totally fine and got allergy tests. But she was 14, and she's my age. So that's, 14 years after we found out and you started educating me. And she was careful, because I knew her at university. She was careful. But she was much more nonchalant about it than
Cavalier.
I was. Yeah, I mean, she was still careful. She still carried her EpiPens and everything like that. Yeah. But she just didn't, she wasn't as watchful. And I don't think that time that she had the reaction that she'd had another one. So she was careful enough. And I don't think she particularly liked them anyway, so she avoided them. But... yeah. So it was a different approach, and I think that's definitely something. It's much more shocking as a teenager, as an adult, to develop an allergy, because you're going to have to completely change something.
Yeah. I've just met a 23-year-old just been diagnosed as anaphylactic with nuts, and she loves nuts.
Oh.
And I think, oh, you poor thing. I really feel for her.
Yeah, it's much harder to go from something that you knew to not being able to have it, from, for me, never having been able to have it. So for me, I can't miss it. Smell repulses me. So my body is already telling me, you don't want to eat this and you don't like it. So for me, it's totally normal and I don't miss out on anything. Okay, so I want to go back quite a few years, back to when, after the allergy test, and back to playgroup. So what happened? I mean, this was your first sort of time giving up looking after me and giving my, over my food role, looking, food prep role to someone else.
Yes. Fortunately, this playgroup was very good about not giving anything for the children to eat other than fruit.
Oh, that's easy.
So that was just in the mornings. Mm-hmm. However, there was a moment when I'd come to pick you up after playgroup. It was just a morning session. And I think you'd been going there 2 years already. And you had a lollipop in your hand. And I saw it. My eyes went wide with alarm. I took you straight back into the playgroup, holding your wrist with the... And I said to the leaders, where did she get this? And they all looked as if to say, oh God, what's coming? And I said, she's never, ever had a sweet until now. And then they realized that there was you, Nina, nut allergic as well. I said, it's probably not got any nuts, but this must never happen. This cannot happen. And they all reviewed the policy immediately after that to decide that it should be the parents of the children who should decide whether or not that child can eat this sweet because her little Georgia or Sarah's having a birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was one little pointer.
And did you have
any... We can talk about Bishop Heron.
Oh, yeah, but I was just wondering before we move on, did you, like, have any interactions with other parents? And this was me as, like, a 2, 3, 4-year-old, wasn't it?
In play group. About 3 and 3 and a half, yeah. Yeah, you'd be invited to birthday parties.
And how was that?
That was... From my part, I was fine because I'd gotten used to your allergy. I'd got the processes, the food sorted, everything. And come being invited to parties, I would have to take along your emergency kit, which is the EpiPen and the...
Pyritin, the nebulizer, the inhalers. The
Yeah, that's it. And... I would have to say to the parents, could you give me a bit of time? Because I need to talk you through Nina's allergy kit. Oh, why? And I said, because if she has an allergy reaction, you're going to have to deal with it because I may not be able to get there in time. Which freaked them out a fair bit.
I bet.
Some of them were very happy just to hear what had to be done. It was their curiosity, I think, more than anything.
Yeah.
But I would talk them through the whole process about using the EpiPen, where to stab you with it, and to ring the ambulance, and nebulize you, and sit you up or lie you down, or whatever the prescribed position was at that moment in time. And they would be absolutely kind of, oh my God, back flat against the wall and probably fainting if they could. Wow, my goodness. You have to deal with this, they said. Yep. And it shocked them just even seeing the EpiPen out of the box, still in its cylinder. But this 6-7 inch piece of medical equipment that they might have to use, yes, really did strike home the severity of it and their part to play. And I've never seen so many mums without allergic children checking so many wrappers so wonderfully well.
Oh, that's great. Because
for the ingredients.
Before this time, had you encountered any other children with allergies like mine?
No.
And how was it for you? Because I know of the mums that I hear about now, they're incredibly worried about letting their children go to school, go to playgroup, play at friends' houses. And they're in a huge panic. Like, how did you deal with that?
Right. Well, I decided that as I spent the whole day in shock when I got the letter saying you were allergic, and I realised things had to change quite radically. Well, not so much change, but my attention had to change. And that was the big thing. I was on with food with you. I wasn't on red alert, but I now moved to red alert as soon as I got that letter. And I thought, right, I can't live at this state all the time. So I've got to work this out so that I can manage
this
allergy and get to grips with it. Because it's never going to change. It's for life. So I thought, right, got to deal with it from that point. So I decided that as it shocked me, I thought it only fair to share that with other people who were going to feed you. Just a tiny bit.
Okay.
Yeah. But thing was, they had to realize how serious this is.
Yeah.
And if I sensed
if you censored
that
it,
they didn't take it seriously, I wouldn't leave you. But I would talk them through, take the cap off, how to hold it, when to phone the ambulance, look at these instructions here. And I talk them through the instruction leaflet in the pack. And some of them were said, yeah, great, okay, I know exactly what to do. That's fine, I'm up for it.
Okay.
And they read everything and they had a great party and you were returned unharmed.
Fab.
And it was wonderful.
And how did
but
you
if
deal...
I suspected.
Yeah. And how did you deal with those parents who were not great about this, that weren't, that either treated it a bit blasé or didn't believe you? What did you do?
Yeah, well, it was kind of like, well, it's more or less what your dad experienced with a friend of his, because your dad suffers with asthma, as you know. And this friend, Justin, said to your dad, well, what did people do in the old days when there weren't inhalers? And Robin, your dad, turned around to Justin and said, they dot, 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 died, Justin.
not died. To put, yeah, not to put a too fine a point on it.
Yes. So I would say to people, okay, well, if you get a bit of peanut butter on your finger, what do? You lick it off. Fine, no problem. My daughter gets a bit of peanut butter on her finger. It's ambulance in the hospital time. Are you really prepared to ring that ambulance and sit in that ambulance with you and go there because I can't get there on time?
Or in time,
are you really prepared to do that? Yeah, in time, yeah. And I said, it's all right, don't worry. I won't bring Nina to the party. Because they didn't want to say, no, I'm not prepared to do it. They didn't have enough bottle to say, no, I'm sorry, I don't want to do it. I can't take that risk. Had they done, I would have said, that's fair enough. I understand completely. And I wouldn't have changed my friendship with them because of that. Because I know this is an issue that some people just can't get to grips with, don't want to get to grips with, or see they have no need to.
Yeah, which is fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how did you feel about the fact that I couldn't go to some of the birthday parties? Because I don't remember these, so it probably
not too bad.
Oh, okay.
No. I go to the picnics in the parks, and when they saw you playing and saw how I handled everything, they got used to it, and then they finally decided, well, it can't be that hard. So you did get invited to the parties then.
Ah,
and
so
they
you just
took on board what I was saying. It's just familiarity.
Yeah,
I think.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
And what I have discovered, the danger zones for you were not in shops, not in restaurants, not in hotels, not at home, but with friends of friends, where somebody had no legal or financial responsibility toward you. Friends of friends and relatives not close. But still the same. And you'd say, Nina's allergic, but my aunt would still feed you a cake with walnuts in it.
I don't remember that one, but I do remember the
story. Oh, well, Dad jumped on that one pretty quick.
I bet.
Yes.
That's a bit later in my life, was it?
You were about 5 or 6.
Oh, okay. So this is just after I'd started school.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's move on to primary school.
So you'll be hearing more about my journey with allergies and my parents' journey with allergies next week. And as you might have heard at the end of that clip, we will be going to talking about what it was like going to school with anaphylaxis. And my primary school actually went not free because I and another girl were the first children to have severe allergies. So next week you'll hear more about that. I'll continue talking to my mum, interviewing her about all that she has learnt over my lifetime and raising me. If you listen to the episode last week, then I was talking about my top tips, my five things that I do to manage allergy fears. How do you stop living in fear of allergies? And you can listen to my episode. If you go to iTunes, it's episode 11, or you can go to eatallergysafe.com/episode11. I also mentioned last week about an allergy guide for parents that is everything I know, everything I've learned, everything my parents learned, as well as a lot of research about how to live with allergies and make sure it isn't the only thing in your life. So that is going to be, it is open for registration. Group one have already started, or they will be starting on Monday the 2nd of January, and group two registration is open. And if you would like more details on A Parent's Guide to Allergies, you can visit the show notes for this episode and there'll be a link at the bottom of the page. If you feel like allergies are really weighing you down, that they're stressing you out, then take a look at this parent's guide that I've put together. It's a collection of online tutorials. You get worksheets, you get checklists, you get so much help, and I'm always on hand, so you can always email me with your questions. Something I've worked very hard on and something I'm very passionate about, because I believe that living with allergies doesn't need to be a burden to you, and you can make it a healthy lifestyle choice and you can make it a fun part of your life. So that's all for today, and I look forward to speaking with you all next week and sharing with you more about my allergy journey and some of the allergy wins that my mum and my dad and I have learned throughout my life. So thank you again, everyone, for listening. It's great to hear you. I hope you've had a wonderful Christmas and New Year holiday period, and that you're getting ready for the new year and starting as you mean to go on. So make sure to share and get in touch via Twitter, Facebook. We'd love to hear what you thought about the episode. Okay, bye-bye for now.
You have been listening to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast by Nina Moda. If you want to help other people with allergies discover this podcast, then please rate it in iTunes. It only takes a few seconds. Your rating could make the crucial difference in letting a fellow allergy sufferer find out that they're not alone and help is available. Thank you.